Good morning, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome to UBS's Top of the Morning podcast. So today we are going to turn our focus back to sustainable investing and touch on some recent developments as it relates to ESG or environmental, social, and governance factors. Joining me on the line for the conversation today, pleased to welcome to Top of the Morning Amantya Muhyiddini, sustainable investing strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. So Amantya, good morning to you. I believe this is your first time joining us on the Top of the Morning podcast. So a pleasure to have you on with us and looking forward to our conversation today.
Good morning, Dan. It's great to be here. Thank you very much for the invite.
Absolutely. And Amantya, I know you're joining us today to highlight the latest edition of the Sustainable Investing Perspectives publication series. And real quickly for our listeners and especially our clients, I do want to point out that this publication is available now for you to reference up on UBS Online Services. Though if you are a client of UBS listening in, simply reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of the publication directly. But Amantya, as a starting point, it might be helpful if you can provide our listeners with a bit of a refresher in terms of what this publication series offers and the areas of focus that you highlighted in the latest edition.
Sure, happy to, Dan. So this is a monthly publication which we launched in the summer, so just fairly recently. The goal of the publication is to highlight every month key developments in the industry that we are seeing and we believe will have implications and are relevant for investors who are interested in the space of sustainable investing. So this month, to give you an idea, we're discussing how economies and business benefit from reduced inequalities, which takes different forms. We're also looking at the importance of biodiversity to our economic system, and we identify ways that investors can invest in biodiversity or its repletion, as well as we look at some evidence of ESG issues continuing to come to the fore and have an impact on companies.
Appreciate that refresher on what the publication series is and what it offers to readers. I do want to spend a few moments diving a bit deeper into the focus areas highlighted in the latest publication. So one of those focus areas being on how societies, economies, and businesses benefit from reduced inequality. So Amantya, what kinds of inequalities are currently present in these areas and what steps are being taken to, in fact, reduce them?
Thanks for the question. So inequalities can appear in various forms, and this will often depend on the specific country or region that you are looking at. However, at a high level, we see them appearing in the form of discrimination based on race or ethnicity, gender, or the gender and sexual preferences of individuals, as well as their religious background and so on. And we find that these inequalities very subtly start undermining our economies at a large scale and therefore business opportunities for companies. I'll go into that maybe deeper in a bit, but as we're seeing these inequalities manifest, we're also seeing increasing efforts by governments to start addressing these issues. One thing that attracted our attention last month was France, which recently enacted legislation doubling its paternity leave to about 28 days, seven of which are mandatory for companies in France to provide, which will come at somewhat of a short-term cost for companies as they have to adjust if they're not providing this mandatory leave at the moment. However, at the end of this adjustment, and for those who already do provide it, this will bring a potential benefits in terms of labor mobility as well as gender equity. And this is just one example of a change. Another one from here in the United States was in June when we saw the U.S. Supreme Court rule that firms can no longer fire workers if they do not like the gender of their partner, thus closing, therefore, another potential route for inequality. And then really opening up opportunities for people of a LGBTQ identity to have more secure employment.
So Amantya, as a follow-up to that, what would you say are the benefits yielded in these areas as a result of inequality reduction, and what challenges exist in order for this to be achieved and sustained on a going forward basis?
Sure. So as I said, it really, this issue has been studied widely by academics as well as within our industry. And the answer very much depends on the specific issue that you are looking at, and of course the specific location or country. So just to take a few, if you look at gender inequality, for example, we've seen women are still underrepresented in positions of directorships in corporate boards as well as in senior management. And we've also seen evidence of improved productivity and improved returns for companies that have that do better at gender equality, so they have higher rates of gender representation. So this is just one example at the company level. Another example that is just broader at an economy level is looking at the inequality faced by Black and African American people in the United States, where a recent study by Citigroup found that closing the Black racial gap in wages, in access to housing credit, in business loans, and in and the gap in access to higher education in the United States 20 years ago could have contributed another $16 trillion to the GDP in the U.S. And they also estimated that closing that gap today could add another $5 trillion to GDP in the next 5 years. And this type of research has been corroborated by other research firms. McKinsey published similar results also earlier this year in the summer. So again, this was one country-specific issue. But if you look at this question of ethnic inequality, so kind of broadening it a little bit to apply it at the global level, an academic study published in a University of Chicago journal found that at this global level, ethnic inequality is negatively correlated with economic development, meaning the countries that have the highest ethnic inequality, and this is starkest really in the world's least economically developed countries, had a harder time kind of coming up the economic development spectrum. So really the impacts are significant at the global level, which is why it's important for companies to be aware of this, for investors to be aware of this. And it's one of the reasons why the United Nations made reduced inequalities one of its goals. It's specifically goal number 10 of the 17 UN development goals that were set in 2015 and are setting a challenge for us all to meet by 2030.
Thank you, Amantia. So it sounds like progress has been made on these fronts in various parts of the world, but still more work to be done on this front. So look forward to hearing developments as we make our way further down the pike. So maybe we can pivot over now to the next focus area, that being biodiversity. So Amantia, how critical is biodiversity to sustainable development, and what are the costs associated with its depletion?
Sure. So we're just speaking about a major social issue which affects our entire globe, and now we're pivoting to an environmental issue. So what we've noticed about biodiversity is that it's really come to the fore as an area of focus with the pandemic that we find ourselves in part because biodiversity is so critical to our world and to sustainable development, as it provides this source of potential research for medicine and medication, and it also helps provide sources for our food as well as clean water. And on the flip side, the destruction and the depletion of biodiversity can have spillover effects in the potential increase and of the risk of disease, which again is kind of what we're seeing now as we're in the middle of this pandemic. There's one World Bank report which estimated that 75% of all these emerging infectious diseases that are transmitted to humans are actually starting in animals. And so increased biodiversity would help basically reduce, if not prevent, some of these issues, because pathogens like these will thrive when there are significant changes in our environment, changes like deforestation, for example, and when natural ecosystems are under stress. And then looking at the economic costs other than the kind of these human level costs that I was discussing, the OECD published a report in just last year in 2019 showing that the ecosystem services that are delivered by diversity, the ones I was mentioning, like crop pollination, water purification, flood protection, et cetera. If you aggregate these services, they are worth an estimated $125 trillion per year, which is really a staggering amount. And if you think about quantifying the loss of biodiversity, then the cost annually in the last 20 years was between $4 and $20 trillion per year in terms of ecosystem services that were being lost, essentially. So it's quite significant for us to be, and we need to be paying attention to it.
Now, in terms of a call for action, how can investors participate, get involved in efforts to prevent or even mitigate biodiversity loss?
Biodiversity is linked very closely to human action, essentially, that is resulting in this loss that I was describing. And while investors can't directly invest specifically in biodiversity, they can invest in thematic strategies or in specific SI approaches that can help combat or reverse these causes that are leading to biodiversity loss. So, for example, taking a climate action lens, or investing in better food systems are some ways in which they can help finance essentially solutions that will improve our economic systems, will remain attractive and profitable based on our CIO view, but also will help reverse some of the trends that we're seeing.
So, Amantya, at this point, maybe we can pivot to the final focus area. The publication does highlight a fascinating case study where investors of a corporation, that being Minerals and Mining, a major player in that space, responded to a decision made by that company's management which violated ESG considerations. What can you share with us there in terms of investor reception to that decision by management?
Sure. Thanks, Ben. So this is truly fascinating, and really it was one anecdote, but in a series of multiple anecdotes as well as kind of global data that we're seeing that shows that investors and shareholders are increasingly paying attention to when companies in particular take conscious action and then fail to respond in time and adequately, and that action results in some negative consequence when it comes to either people or environment. So in this case, this mining company was involved in the destruction of a significant Aboriginal site in Australia, and this has been an issue that has been widely covered by the media over the last couple of months. The company was investigated by the Australian Parliament, and then ultimately was engaged with by the major shareholders in the company, who, after having been not satisfied with their response and sort of the rationale that led to this destruction of this important heritage site, put pressure on the company board to request the CEO and senior executives of the company to step down. And so this is very interesting, because the company was doing well financially otherwise, but what this issue indicated was really how these longer-term changes are being manifested, and shareholders really are paying attention, and this is then coming back to companies and the way that they're run.
Amantya, what would you say we learned from this circumstance in terms of investor interest in companies that practice good ESG risk management and integration?
We learned that that interest is definitely increasing. And as I said, I mentioned this is an anecdote, but we've seen multiple of these emerge, in particular in 2020, a year where we're all extremely and acutely aware of our environment and the way that our society and environment and health and economy all are interacting with each other. So investors are paying attention, and they're putting pressure in companies. And we also learned the value of engagement. Engagement does not need to be a stick. It doesn't need to result in this specific outcome that I was mentioning. We've seen many cases where investor engagement has actually resulted in working with companies over time to actually improve the way that they manage some of these risks and even start providing and investing in solutions to some of the major ESG issues and some of the major development challenges that we have ahead. So in many ways, although this story was interesting in itself, it just provides an example of the positive outlook for how investors can help companies and direct them to practicing better ESG risk management and integration.
Well, Amantha, it was great catching up with you this morning on the Top of the Morning podcast, the first of many appearances, I'm sure, though appreciate your insights today into these ESG-related developments, many takeaways and considerations to be mindful of as these factors become more mainstream and common practice. So I do indeed look forward to having some follow-up conversations with you on these topics.
Likewise. Many thanks, Dan, and I hope you and everyone else stays well.
Thank you, Amantha. Appreciate it. And again, today we have been joined by Amantha Muhadini, Sustainable Investing Strategist for the Americas with the UBS Chief Investment Office. As always, I do want to point out to our listeners and especially our clients, many publications and blogs available now for you up on UBS Online Services. And that does include the latest edition of the Sustainable Investing Perspectives publication series that Amantha has been making reference to during our conversation today. So for UBS clients, do be sure to reach out to your financial advisor if you would like to receive a copy of that publication directly, though as I mentioned, the publication can now also be located up on UBS Online Services. Top of the Morning will be back again for you tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.